T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Inside the Archives. I'm your host, Marty Rosenbaum, XRT's digital content producer and all things social media. Before we get underway, I want to remind you that Inside the Archives is on iTunes. You can find us in the iTunes library by searching for Inside the Archives. Subscribe to the show, rate us, leave us a review, and find a full archive of episodes that we've released thus far that you can share with your friends. Chris Swake is a name XRT listeners have heard before and plays a vital role at the radio station. As producer of the XRT Morning Show, he can be found bustling behind the scenes making sure Lynn and Mary's show goes off without a hitch. From producing the sound bites you hear, to booking guests, to coming up with creative concepts for the show, Chris's role as a producer shapes the show in many different ways and is consistently evolving. Our latest episode of Inside the Archives digs into his history and the incredible stories he has to share about being behind the scenes with some of radio's biggest talents. I am pleased right now to welcome XRT Morning Show producer and master controller Chris Swake to the show. Chris, how you doing today?
Master controller. I gotta put that on the business card, I think.
May need to get new ones printed, but I'm excited to have you on here because the role of a radio producer fascinates me, as it's someone who contributes so much to the show, to the sound of the show, to the sound of the radio station, yet they're really in the forefront of things. You know, when you think of a radio producer, it's a loose term, generally gets associated with the main individual found behind the scenes, you know, someone who makes the show run while seldom appearing on air. How do you define that role?
Yeah, I think you've done it. I think we're done here.
Well, that's a wrap.
Cut off the mics and go home. I think there are a couple of different types of producers, right? I don't know if you grew up on or have watched, you know, the Larry Sanders Show. Mm-hmm. There's very much the arty school of producing, where I'm the iron fist, nothing gets past me. I am the guy with the hands on the steering wheel. Nothing gets done without my approval or anything like that beforehand. And then there's the more kind of laid back approach, where it's like, we're a team. Nothing gets done without all of us being on the same page, or at least nothing gets done the right way, or the way the bosses want it to get done, without all of us kind of collaborating on something. I aspire to the arty approach. I'm not there yet. But I definitely am more of the collaborative, approach, where, you know, hey, I've got some ideas. That's really the key, right? Have some ideas. If you don't have any ideas, it's kind of tough to do anything in an ideas-driven business.
You're in the wrong line of business, then.
I feel like more and more so, I think that tends to be, unfortunately, the prevailing winds of our industry, where it's just there's usually sort of a dearth of ideas, which, you know, if at that point you don't have any ideas, what are you selling? What are you doing?
Right.
You know? So it's kind of, you know, here's some things. I think this might provide some interesting fodder if you guys want to go a different route, you know. And sometimes we'll just bounce back and forth, you know, between Lynn, Mary, and myself, and, you know, find out where, you know, where we are, you know, usually with just kind of shooting the breeze sometimes, you know.
Now, you've been with XRT for several years now, but it's not your first foray into radio. Take us through some other stations you've been at and what it's like to produce for different formats and different shows.
Yeah, good. Started producing radio here in Chicago. I've gotten very lucky. I haven't had to move. This is my hometown. I haven't had to move. I haven't had to start out in, you know, tiny, you know, 1,000 you know, population town or anything like that. Cut my teeth here, actually, on this floor.
Really?
With WCKG, the former 105.9 FM, which is now a simulcast of, you know, sister station BBMAM.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, working in the talk format, which, you know, along with XRT was really my passion to start out with, because it's just... And especially with CKG, it was such a free-flowing. It wasn't like you're limited to just political talk. You know, you're limited to whatever you can come up with that's really, at the end of the day, funny, hopefully, and entertaining. The demise of that station, there's a lot to unravel there, so I won't go too far into it, but it was under different, obviously different ownership. Now it's been gone for a decade now. But, you know, learning from some of the best there as far as producing is concerned was, you know, definitely a, you know, and kind of watching them work and watching them do their things was definitely helpful, obviously, in, you know, learning on, you know, how to speak to talent and how not to speak to talent. And not that that's kind of a complicated thing, but, you know, how to try to get your ideas across, right, rather than bully your way in, and, you know, knowing when and where to put like a finer touch on things and what have you, because a lot of it is kind of massaging. You know, massaging your ideas with what the prevailing winds are of the day and, of course, with what the host already is comfortable with doing. So, yeah, WCKG was really the first place for me, my first stop, producing for Stan Lawrence and the late, great Terry Armour, formerly of the Tribune, and Gary Meyer, who I think we all know. So, yeah, those were the first two, you know, kind of big ones there. And, you know, did some work with Pete McMurray there as well. And when that whole thing, you know, flipped formats, I was very lucky to be offered a gig producing commercials for the station that replaced it. That little foray didn't last very long, certainly not as long as I would have liked. But then I wound up getting bounced over to WLS AM and FM, where I worked with Ro Khan and Richard Roper. Dick Biondi, and yeah, and that's where it was like, okay, obviously those are two very disparate formats. You've got a, you know, a what was at the time referred to as an oldies format on WLS-FM, now, of course, Classic Hits, and then, you know, Political Talk, which was kind of a different thing. That said, Ro and Roper were doing a kind of a different show than much of the rest of the station was doing. It wasn't... Obviously, it wasn't Rush Limbaugh, you know what I mean, where it's just, Obama, Muslim, and instead was very much a, it had a political bent, but it was more of a general interest sort of comedy take on the political winds of the day, you know, which is what always kind of attracted me to that show. And I was never like the executive producer of that show. I was just like an associate guy working under some really talented people and everything like that, because I just kind of, you know, wound up over there, as it turns out. And yeah, so it was great to kind of, you know, cut my teeth on the political end of things there and what have you. Yeah, and then luckily Norm gave me a former PD emeritus of all things AAA and rock radio. Norm Weiner gave me a call after a few years there and asked me if I would be interested in rejoining XRT and, you know, working with Lynn and Mary. And of course, Lynn's an amazing person. Mary's an amazing talent and together, they're just, yeah, they're just, I couldn't be happier,
yeah,
frankly.
Well, I want to get into your interactions with Lynn and Mary and working alongside them in a little bit, because we could spend all day here talking about it, but we won't.
I thought that's what we were going to do, is talk all day for this, right?
Well, we won't subject our listeners to that right now. I don't want to torture them.
Who's listening? It's me, Lynn and Mary, and you at this point.
I don't want to subject to them about details about their own life. They have to live it, so that's enough. But you touched on an interesting point earlier, and that's working alongside talent. Now, the public, when you see a show, you know, if it's one person, or even taking TV, let's say like the Colbert Show, you have a host who's front and center of everything. And even though it's not their own ideas that are getting brought onto the TV, it's almost portrayed that way. You know, how does a radio producer bridge that gap between, you know, coming up with your own creative
ideas and elements to add to the show while still keeping it under the greater brand of the talent.
So that was one of the things that Norm in hiring me back had me do, is he had me write what amounts to basically a mini Lin's Bin. So it was very much to, you know, what you're driving at, you know, where it's like, okay, you've got to have obviously your own ideas, but you also got to know the voice that you're working in. You know what I mean? You got to know what's right for the station, what's right for the talent and the feel, right? You know, if you're a chef at a specific type of restaurant and you decide, well, I'm going to bring in a totally different cuisine, that's not going to make the owners of that restaurant very happy when this is what they've been doing for 40 years plus. So, you know, it's about knowing, you know, that host, knowing that station pretty well, and knowing your own voice and how that all fits together. And so, yeah, I mean, and obviously in knowing the city and knowing, you know, being from here, and, you know, that's kind of a leg up on things, you know, so.
Right. And a lot of it has to be trial by error, too. I have to imagine for as many great ideas that you can execute, there's some that have totally flopped. And, you know, speaking firsthand, running things on the website, putting out stories, hit the publish button, say, oh, man, this is going to be great. And it just falls flat on its face. It can be a defeating feeling, but you almost have to do that to yourself.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that. So everything is golden as far as I'm concerned, where we fit in. Yeah, no, it's... You know, it's like it took me a long time, and I still am racked with self-doubt, but it took me a long time to kind of like put that voice on like somewhere on the back burner in the moment, because in the moment you're kind of trusting your own instincts and trusting the people that are working with you, because, you know, Lin and Mary, they've got more experience than I do, and they've certainly got more experience here at XRT. So they know a lot, you know, and obviously having the guidance of a program director who's very specific in knowing what they want as well. And then marrying that all together and, you know, the vision of really, you know, what we all want the end result to be. And yeah, I mean, you know, when something does fall flat, you're like, ah, crap. You know, it's fun to have like a line or two, you know what I mean, that you think that's kind of funny, that would fit in well, that plays off of something that's happened in the news or something like that. And for it to be delivered and then you kind of hear it out loud and you're like, oh, yeah, no, that worked well and much better in the head or on paper than it did, you know, out in the world. But they're not all going to be winners.
Right. Know? Well, and producing, you know, the music format like it is here at XRT is much different than doing a talk format where you're consistently having to create conversation or comment on conversation. You know, here at XRT, we have the music to fall back on, whereas at a talk station, you don't get that luxury, really. You know, how does that play into it when producing a show and just having to create that content on a daily basis? And then, you know, what does the role of a guest play on the show in contributing to that as well?
Okay, so that's kind of a two-parter. I feel like it is totally different, right? You have the music to lean back on, right? But you also... people don't just tune in for the music. That's obviously a big part of it. But I mean, with all the different avenues out there, Pandora, Spotify, oh my God, I almost, Google Play or whatever, you know, Apple Music, there's so many different venues to go to if all you want is just music. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to tune into something that has an appeal, right, like locally, you're going to want to come to an XRT or, you know, some other local thing. And so that's kind of where the emphasis is and like how to kind of juxtapose that, or not even juxtapose, but work with the music in that regard. So obviously, you know, Lin, maybe you've heard, he's a man about town. He likes going to shows. Mary does too, but Lin, he's everywhere. So, you know, and by the way, if you ever see him at a show, if you ever, you know, high-fiving the guy, watch your hands and make sure you buy him a beer, especially if it's a weeknight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he has nothing going on the next day.
No.
But, you know, Having said that, you've got, the music, you got the stuff between the music, and ideally that's why the people are kind of tuning in, you know, to give you something unique, you know, or to get, something unique. And, so, hey, band's playing in town. Here's, we're playing this artist. Maybe they're a new artist. Here they are. Their new record's out this day. Interesting factoids about it now. And just kind of being up on what's going on, both in the city and just in music at large. Foo Fighters, they're on a leg of the tour they've already passed by Chicago. Just the other day, they had like a whole little reunion thing with, Chris Novoselic, so it was basically the surviving members of Nirvana. And of course, it's the internet. So as soon as you post anything on the internet, hey, isn't this on the internet? As soon as you post anything on the internet, you're going to get all of the trollish, guys, gals who have nothing going on to just, chime in. It's not really a reunion. What do you mean? It says the
did you see his response to that?
It was great.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we tried emailing Kurt, but I haven't heard a response since about 1993. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And, so it's like having that in your pocket, it's like, yeah, I mean, I love, Nirvana. Foo Fighters have got some amazing songs. So it's like, we're playing stuff, though, from them that's, we're at this point, we're looking at upwards of 25 years old. So, if not older, if you're going off of something off, never mind. So how do you, add some sort of spice to that outside of the music? Well, there you go. You got a little bit of material there to work with from the, the Nirvana, quote unquote, reunion thing. And as far as guests go, with talk, it opens it up a lot more with having guests on because you're talking anyway, right? And so, having guests on who are maybe in town, like touring, comedians, musicians, etc., political figures, whatever else, you're filling time. So you got a couple guys in town, great, get them on, and everyone's going to want to promote their show or their thing they're selling or just themselves, or, you build relationships. They want to hang out and just shoot the breeze, even if you're not, they're not really doing anything, if they're just in town for like a private event. And I've had stuff like that happen on accident, happy accidents, I was, producing Lynn's anniversary show, which is sort of becoming an annual tradition now.
The third annual 25th anniversary.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm like, oh, it's the Rockstar Death Age. It's 27. It's the 27th. If we make it past this year, who knows? Years being on the air, which is, think about that for
crazy.
A second. It's insane. Like, I can't believe you'd even want to do that, let alone, be able to do that, let alone, in this industry. Good Lord.
Yeah.
It's like Freddie Jones Band, obviously a big staple of XRT over the years. I happen to love In a Daydream. I've worked with those guys in the past, producing Shamrock and Roll broadcast that, we had them perform live on. And those guys, super down-to-earth, affable, really good guys, great musicians, obviously big staples of XRT. Hey guys, I give them a call. I know they're not really based locally anymore, more on the West Coast and everything like that. But, hey guys, producing this thing with Lynn, XRT, it's the anniversary thing. It's a morning show broadcast, so I know it's a little no musician wants to get up at an early hour. Hell, I don't even want to get up at an early hour. That's what I always say, is that they pay me to wake up early. Everything else I do for free. And, hey man, I don't know what you guys are, I just checked your website. I didn't see anything on your itinerary. I don't know where you guys are, but if you're in town, we'd love for you to stop by. Obviously, we'd love for you to perform. And we know we've got the 25th anniversary of In a Daydream coming up. It'd be great to have you guys on. And how did you know we would be in town, was the response I got. And I says, yeah, I knew you guys would be in town. It was just fun. And yeah, no, of course, it was just a total coincidence, dumb luck. And yeah, they happened to be in town. And it's like, yeah, we would do anything for XRT and Lynn. Yeah, we'll be there. We'll get up early in the morning. We'll bring our instruments. We'll play for you guys and the live audience and the audience out in the radio world. And it'll be a blast. And yeah, we'll promote our show. And hot diggity dog. It was like, all right, it's all coming together. together. It's just like random happenstance. You know?
That's got to be a rewarding feeling.
It is, yeah, because you know there, for every one of those, there's like three or four other ones where you're like, oh, I just can't get this guy on, or I can't get this band on, and man, it would be a coup to get these guys on, and they're having issues with this, that, or the other thing. The timing isn't working out. Maybe there's a label rep who is a little salty that day, and so it's kind of tough, and you know, so it's, you know, it's kind of a challenge music wise. You know, you're not really trying to do a lot of talk, you know, right. What I mean, you know, while there is the, like I had mentioned before, there is the tendency, you know, you want to spice things up between the songs. Well, yeah, but if you go too long, you know, too much spice, not a good thing, you know what I mean? Like, I like to taste the flavors, not just
exactly
the spiciness.
Well, and that's one of the interesting parts about producing a show like Lynn and Mary's, is because you do have that music element to it, and you don't have the openness that a talk show may provide, where if you do want to book a guest, it's, hey, we're not going to have them here for 10 minutes. You know, sometimes they're going to be playing music. Maybe they'll just have casual conversation for a little bit, or they'll do an interview that's off the air. But you have to adhere to these strict, you know, guidelines as far as time opening you have on the show. You know, what kind of challenges do you run into if you do have a good opportunity but have this limited time frame, and how do you go about executing those?
So I you know, I hope you're not offended being the digital web, you know, content producer, you know, the overarching XRT ones and zeros guys I like to refer to you when I'm not calling you Marty. having digital content on the web has just been so freeing in that respect, because you can have that half hour long conversation with an artist or whomever, generally an artist is kind of the goal here, and you can have the long form version uninterrupted posted on the website at 93xrt.com. You can get massive push from the socials without even really hitting it that hard on the air now. You know what I mean? And obviously that helps a ton. You know, right. The reach is immense there. So why wouldn't you do it? So of course we do. But I mean, you know, you can have an excerpt of an interview, you know, really dig into this, just the really good, tight, you know, few minutes of a thing, and have that be great, and have it service the artist too, as far as promotion's concerned. And then have the full Lynn talking about, you know, meeting this artist back in 1973 somewhere. Or have, you know, oh, hey, great restaurant recommendations that Lynn can provide, as only he can, really. Yeah. And have the artist go, oh, my God, yeah, that reminds me of the last time I was in Chicago. I ate at, you know, Spiaggia, and it was great. Oh, my God, I had this, that, and the other thing. And then, like, have them launch into a conversation just about food and drink in other cities, even. And, like, that plays so well. I as a fan, love that stuff, you know what I mean? And I'm sure artists love talking about it too, because it's not just the same old, oh yeah, my record's out this week, and we're touring, and you know, I really thank the fans, because you know, they've been great, and radio's been great to us too, and you know, it's this album was a departure, but also it was a return to our roots, and you know, it's not so much just, you know, standard, you know, canned responses, and it's like, oh, now they can let their personality shine a little bit more, and we don't have to worry about like tightening up, you know, for the air.
Well, and that makes for great content too. And you know, if you have Lynn or Mary talking to someone for 15 minutes and they come to you and say, Chris, we had this conversation with so and so, it's 15 minutes long, you know, what does that conversation look like between the three of you on how you incorporate something like that on the radio?
So the collaborative process, you know, like, you know, generally speaking, it's, you know, we can generally, hopefully, be involved in the conversation / interview, all of us together. For instance, you know, generally whenever there's like a phone interview that Lynn's doing off the air, or any other kind of pre-recorded interview, I'm in the studio, I'm engineering it, I'm producing it. You know, I've given Lynn a whole litany of information on it. He's also extremely, as is Mary, of course, given her journalistic roots and everything, excellent at doing their own research as well. So between all three of us, we're like little herd animals, you know. It's like, okay, if one of us is down in the grass feeding, you know, the other two can keep an eye out and make sure that there's no lions that are going to pounce out of nowhere and just, you know, wipe us off the face of the earth here. So we've got all the bases covered that way. But, you know, I'm in the studio usually producing, engineering these things. And so, you know, as the conversation's occurring, I can make mental or physical notes to get this, this is good, this is gold, this is good right here, and then kind of piece it together. And then, you know, on a few occasions, obviously with like, you know, a Robert Plant or anything like that, there's so much wheat and very little chaff. So it's like, oh man, some stuff, it's a tough choice. And it's like, I don't want this to hit the cutting room floor. Well, again, with the digital, it's, you know, with the digital aspect of it, it's so much easier now to be like, well, there isn't really a cutting room floor per se, you know, but obviously you want to hit the main stuff of why is the person on the air? Well, you know, Todd Rundgren has a show coming up with Chicago Sinfonietta. It's a benefit show. It's at House of Blues. Okay, we need to have all of that information in the interview on the air without question. And then, you know, some other things that pertain to that show or pertain to something else that's interesting. It's, again, it's kind of trusting your instincts. You know it when you hear it. It's like, I've done a billion shows of all different variety, you know, talk or music at XRT, at other places, and I know when it's good as it's happening, but I know when it's great when it's over. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little easier for me to kind of dissect it in the aftermath, especially in the immediate afterglow, and go, oh, that was okay, that worked well, you know what I mean, like, okay, that grabbed me and that was good. So yeah, I don't know, I mean, that's did I answer your question? I feel like I've strayed a little far.
You got it. Yeah, no, you got it. Well, and that's interesting too, because it leads me to the next, you know, question, which you beautifully said, you've done billions of shows now.
So I feel out like
of those,
it at least
out of those billions,
just today,
yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
But out of all these, you know, shows that you've done, who have been some of the most interesting guests that you've had on the show?
Interesting. Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough. That's a tough word for me, I think, because it's so broad, right? Yeah, boy. So, to me, the most interesting guests aren't just the ones who are, you know, kind of going on and giving you a representation of themselves. They're kind of more, you know, conversational and like in the moment and right there giving you something that they're not really just given, you know, anybody else necessarily, mm-hmm. you know. When I was producing Gary's show, we got Davy Jones of the Monkees on for like an entire morning, and it was insane. And like, he was just such a sweet guy, and like, I can't believe some of the stuff. Like, I don't remember if we asked him to do it. I'm sure we just asked him like on the air, like on a whim, like, hey man, we've got some Monkees CDs, oh my god, wouldn't you like to sing along with your own music? No, it's a terrible thing, don't do that. But you know, we did, and he sang like a verse and a chorus of like several songs, and it was just like, I'm sitting 6 feet away from Davy Jones and he's doing it. Anyway, it was like mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Super nice guy, almost to a fault, because, you know, it's okay to say no to bad ideas. That was even if it's on the air, steer into the skid. If it's bad, you know, just go whole hog into the car crash, you know. Don't try and soft backpedal it, because it's just going to get really uncomfortable for everybody, you know. Obviously, Robert Plant, you know, who Lynn has spoken with and developed quite the rapport with over the years, you know. And that's the other nice thing, too, about, you know, working with, like, a Lynn and a Mary. They're fixtures here, you know. They have a history with a lot of the people they speak with. So there's a certain familiarity there that you can't just make up, you know,
right.
What I mean? And I'm not going to say they're best buds. They go out to you, oh, yeah, whenever they're in town, blah, blah, blah. That's not the case. But, you know, there is a certain level of comfort there, I think,
yeah,
that they both afford, you know, certain guests.
And trust as well. You know that it's a familiar face / voice on the other end of the microphone when you're speaking, and that almost lends itself to opening yourself up where you might not do so otherwise. But, you know, that Davy Jones story that you just shared got me thinking, you know, how does that stuff get brought out, you know, and what mixture is that of just the guest being an interesting person and that's just their type of personality? Or how much does the on-air personality really have to try and bring that out of the guest?
I think that varies, yeah, person to person, right? I mean, I feel like the best hosts, if you will, like, just naturally bring that out of people. And the best guests let it happen. And yeah, and I mean, I'm just like kind of going over in my head like some of those that were really successful and some of those that were a little less successful, like surprising names, really, as far as I'm concerned, anyway. Like we had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on, and he was just, it was just not a good day for him. It was just not a good, Wayne Brady also. Like, this is when I was producing Stan and Terry's show, and it was just like, why are these guys putting up walls? And they're, frankly, they're being kind of dicks to us. And it was like, why? Like, I mean, if you've never met Stan Lawrence or Terry Armour, you wouldn't know, but they were really warm, like, funny people. And again, really up on the things and the people that they were speaking of. And so it was like kind of like baffling. Like, why are you fighting these hosts that are just, they're doing their job. B, they're not being confrontational or weird. C, they're just genuinely good people and good broadcasters. It was just a very strange thing on those couple of occasions. But yeah, you know, I mean, there's never any shortage of surprises, I guess. And the key thing is, I think, to just roll with it, because once you're in it, you just gotta roll. You just gotta keep going.
Well, that leads perfectly to my next question, which is, when you sense that things are heading south, and that little alarm in your head goes, uh oh, we got to cut this off, or at least bring it to a halt. You know, how do you communicate that with someone that's in the middle of an interview? And I'm sure they get that sense also that this isn't working out as well as we had hoped. But, you know, how does that process unfold?
Frantic hand signals, a lot of tugging at the collar, like, no, this is bad and awkward and awful. It totally depends. It depends on the guest. It depends on if the guest is in the studio, if they're on the phone or via ISDN or anything like that. You know, if they're being recorded remotely, it's a lot easier, because then you're in a studio. I'm looking at you right now, and I'm like using hand signals here to gesticulate with, you know, okay, you know, we see each other, and I can just turn down my mic and, you know, put you, you know, turn down your mic while the other person's gabbing away, and we can actually have like a very brief conversation while the other person's doing their thing. It's like, it's a little distracting, but that's a way to handle that, or it can be handled. On the air, when there's a guest in the studio, it's a little bit more challenging, because at some point then you're going to throw the guest off, and I don't like to be a part of the on-air product so much. I've always tried to be more in the background doing my thing. I'm not really comfortable in front of a microphone quite so much as I am in the background. And I've had it on a couple of occasions where I go into the studio to drop a note or, you know, some other sort of information to the host, and then it catches the guest off guard, and who's this person, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's just, you know, producer Chris Swick doing his thing, and da, 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 da. And then it's like, oh, great, now I've distracted from the conversation that was happening, and now it is about me. Those are things I do not ever want. It's first and foremost, it should never be about me. The show is not, my name is not anywhere on the masthead. So it's about XRT, the music we play, Lynn Bramer, Mary Dixon, and that's kind of it. You know what I mean? Anyway, so when you really got to kind of pick your spots, if there's like, you know, if Mayor Emanuel is in, you know, he's generally pretty good about kind of steamrolling through a thing. But, you know, it's on occasion you don't want to all of a sudden wind up becoming the show and the conversation. If there's something that's interesting and engaging happening on the air for you to derail it, because you had something you wanted to contribute or some message you needed to get to the host, it's like, oh, it's a bummer. I hate when that happens.
Yeah, but it's inevitable. And I mean, especially when you come into these things, you book a guest, and in your mind, you're like, hey, this is how it's going to go. But right away, you can see, okay, this isn't how we planned out. You got to adapt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the pros generally do that, you know, where it's like, okay, you know, just keep rolling with it, you know, knowing how to kind of grab the steering wheel a little bit more. It's like any conversation, right? I mean, we're just people talking in a room.
Right.
At the end of the day, whether there's 3 million people listening or whether there's zero people listening, we're just people talking in a room. And so it's like, you know, if you're out with your buddies or if you're out on a date and the conversation's getting a little like, what the heck is going on? Or it's getting a little on the dull or stale side, to know how to just kind of nudge it a little bit in the direction you feel like maybe it needs to go to be better for everybody. I don't know. Or if it's like really interesting for the person talking, you have to kind of gauge of like why it is and how do I pluck something from that? You know what I mean? So that, you know, everybody's, I guess, satisfied.
Well, next time I'm on a bad date, I'm going to be looking around the corner waiting for you to save me.
Yeah. I'll just say, we have the earpiece thing, right? Where I'll be like hiding in the bushes and, all right, Marty, here's what you're going
to
say.
And it's that intrinsic trust. I know that you're going to be there to save my rear end because you've done it so many times here already.
Oh, yeah. that's the ticket.
Now, I've had Lynn and Mary on the podcast before. And both of them have shared stories that have been, A, incredibly entertaining, B, that I really hoped were true, such as Lynn Bramer not putting on the same pair of shoes in the morning.
I can vouch for that. It's true. And Lynn and Mary, you know, you should know. I would imagine when I say you should know, it's not just Marty Rosenbaum should know. The listener of this should know. They're not ones to put on any sort of affect for anything or any reason.
No.
You know? I've been involved in certain shows where it's like, oh, we're going to make up some funny, wacky blubberder. And it's just like, eh. Not really my style, certainly not Lynn and Mary's style, and definitely not our style as a station.
Well, it's what, I mean, you know, it's what you hear is what you get. And when they're like that, when they step off the air, it's like the same person. It's mind-blowing because you come into this business kind of thing, and okay, off there they could be completely different people. Is this all just a shtick to make the ratings high, to make good radio? You never know, but it's pretty much the same thing. So, you know, What kind of perspective can you add, having worked with them for the length that you have so far, you know, not only to the interactions you've had, but to the types of people they are and how that, you know, contributes to your professional development?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why we get along so well, is that there's no BS. Like, we're not... Even when there's a little BS, there's not really that much BS. You know what I mean? We're not laying it on thick. And when we are, it's totally tongue-in-cheek and, you know, sarcastic. It's again, you know, kind of looping back to the beginning. I'm just going to use my hands and just knock into all the microphones in the room. I hope you don't mind. Looping back to the beginning of the conversation, you know, of the, you know, the Larry Sanders Show and, like, you know, Artie, the producer, you know what I mean? Where he'll put people on and make it so obvious and so thick, you know, like, hello, my boy, how are you doing today? Everything, you're great, okay, you look great, oh, beautiful, oh boy, you look awesome, oh, that show you did the other night was spectacular, I've never seen anything better, and, you know, just lays it on so thick that it's so obviously BS. That is the only thing, like, generally I'll do, you know what I mean, in that regard, whereas it's just, you're just kind of like putting somebody on that, you know what I mean, and it's totally transparent and sarcastic. Lynn and Mary, you know, we'll joke around amongst ourselves in that sort of fashion, but, you know, generally speaking, there's not really a lot of pretense, you know what I mean? We just are who we are, I guess. I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's no wacky stunts.
And it's fun to see that play out, especially on Twitter, too, because you guys have a fantastic Twitter presence, both from the station's perspective, but individually on your own as well. And if you want to follow Chris on Twitter, you can at Chris Swaik. That's C-W-I-A-K. Him, Lynn, and Mary have great banter where it's like you don't need to be interacting with each other as much. You're off of work now. You guys do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a family thing here, which is why I've always loved it. I started here as an intern in 2004, and most of the same principals are still here, especially the on-air staff. And, you know, it's a familial sort of relationship, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, dude, I mean, you and I, Marty, we've hung out outside of work, you know what I mean? Going to shows, just going to a bar, having some cocktails or playing some pool or whatever. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a rare treat. I've worked at places where, and I think we all have, where you're just like, I just can't, I just gotta get home. I just gotta get to 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I gotta get to whatever the time it needs for me to get out of here. And then I can go home and just do my own thing. You know, we share a lot of common interests here, you know, it's a big Venn diagram and there's a giant sliver in the middle and, you know, it's not all music, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that I love about XRT is it's very lifestyle, you know, and it's not, you know, people generally are pretty complicated and have a wide range of things that they like and a wide range of things that they generally aren't fond of. And that's true of this place, too. And, you know, I think everybody here is generally a pretty good person, which is even more of a shock, especially in this industry. So I enjoy hanging out with yous because, you know, yeah, we not only have, you know, the music nerdery thing in common, but, you know, it's like, oh, we like literature or the same television shows or movies and, you know, or maybe I'm not hip on some of this, like I love hanging out and talking to Tom Marker every once in a while when he's here or when I see him out at shows, because obviously the guy runs circles around me with what he knows on blues and other things. And, you know, learning from them is just like, oh yeah, you know, I like being a well-rounded person and, you know, I think we all kind of do. And, you know, I know you and I share a lot of musical, you know, kind of independent math rocky nerdy mm-hmm. stuff, you know what I mean, that really nobody else here generally likes doing. But I know there's enough of a Venn diagram, like, you know, we could sit down with the Jason Thomas and chew the fat about the new or the latest Battles record, and he would, you know, he would be into it totally. And same thing with Marty Leonard's too, you know,
right?
So it's like, you know, it's a nice relationship, man. You know, I think that's any relationship I've ever wanted to be in, where it's, you know, we not just supplement each other, we complement each other.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's that authenticity that, you know, I think translates so well in whatever realm we're putting ourselves out on, you know, whether it's out on the radio, on the website, on social media, is that, you know, the things I see from listeners, it's that it's what's valued. And it's great. It's great to hear that that's the case when you're off there as well. With your compatriots.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, yeah, you nailed it. The, you know, the listeners, you know, especially the ones who've been in it for a long time and, you know, the ones hopefully that are going to be in it for a long time, I think, you know, get that and live that themselves. You know, I'm not a Cubs fan, but I love baseball. I'm a Sox fan, you know, having that as a commonality as well, you know, with a lot of our listeners, you know, it's funny is, you know, it's, we're like the beleaguered Sox fan now. We're, oh, everybody Cubs. And that's how it's always been, though.
It's not new.
It's not new. I mean, the difference is the Cubs are actually good and winning, which is sort of a different thing, really, just in the last several years, you know? And so, you know, it's that commonality that we have as Sox fans of, you know, oh, XRT is the Cubs station. It's like, well, no, they're not. No, we're not just only. I mean, Lynn has, you know, thrown out the first pitch at Sox Park in mm-hmm. the past, and I've gone to Sox games with him on many occasions, you know. But, you know, it's you know, it's a sort of multifaceted, well, we're multifaceted people, you know, the old Diamond Broadcasting, Chicago's finest rock.
Well, Chris, since you said you like being behind the scenes, I need to drag you out and put you in the spotlight.
Oh, no.
So I have a couple of quick hit questions for you. And you actually already answered one of them. It was going to be Cubs or Sox. So and we know, but it leads perfectly into another one. Since
and I'm wearing
you're a Sox fan.
And
you're
I'm
in a Pirates hat.
Pirates
too.
Hat right now. They're my National League team. And that's why you keep hearing this every once in a while, is I'm not used to it. And I'm dopely wearing a hat today. Like I shouldn't have worn a hat.
I was just wondering where that came from. We just had this great talk about baseball. And I said, Pirates? Really? Pittsburgh?
Bought this hat in Pittsburgh, actually, at PNC.
Beautiful. That's a great ballpark. Yeah, I've heard.
Get down there if you haven't.
Okay.
It's actually, I just recently made the drive. It's 7 hours. That's not
really
a very long drive. I mean, that's you know, you don't want to just turn around and do it again, but you make a long weekend out of that. Yeah, there's a lot to see in Pittsburgh, not the least of which, of course, is that beautiful ballpark right on the rivers.
Okay.
River.
I've heard nothing but good things about it, so it's good to hear that that is the case. So, a couple of quick hit questions for you real quick.
Absolutely.
I don't want you to think. I just want you to answer.
If you don't want me to think, yeah, I mean, that's I don't really do that too much. So
just be yourself then. Favorite band?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Probably Shellac of North America, Chicago's own, Steve Albini. Love them. I have loved them since the early 90s, mid-90s, excuse me. Yeah, love them to pieces.
Favorite music venue?
Favorite music venue, Shuba's. The way it sounds, the intimacy, the staff, they're just, I love the place to death. I haven't eaten at the new place yet that's replaced Harmony Grill, but I do love Shuba's.
Favorite pizza?
Oh, God. I unfortunately never got to try Bert's at Bert's place, but his...
So good.
Yeah, his old place, Pequod's, is my jam. For deep dish, for thin crust, it's father and son, except no substitutes.
Mm. Kaminsky or Kaminsky?
That's almost better than saying soldier or soldier's field, my friend. Kaminsky. I am a stickler for, you know, unless you're making fun of, you know, your meatball fan, just go Kaminsky.
Jeffrey or Jeffries?
Wow, Jeffrey or I don't even know what this refers to.
Alshon Jeffrey, that last comment just for this wasn't on my initial okay. list. It's the last meatball comment made me think of it. But now we've strayed way too far from the original topic.
He's a Philadelphia Eagle now. I got no horse in that race.
Be better. Trubisky or Trubinsky?
That's right. Yes.
That's right. Favorite restaurant?
Favorite restaurant, full stop? Oh, God. I haven't really... Jesus, so this is not a very good answer because I don't know if I have a favorite restaurant. God, it depends on what I'm feeling at the moment. I could definitely go give you a favorite bar, but that's not a restaurant now, is it? Favorite restaurant, Jesus, man. I eat way too much.
All of them.
All of them. Yes. Does it serve food? Then I like it. anything that's not fast food, anything that's locally owned, locally run, preferably, you know, sources their food locally, you know, somewhere in the Midwest and pays a fair wage. I generally love Honey Butter Fried Chicken, though.
Ooh, yeah.
That place is, they don't do anything badly. Everything there is just, ugh. The best of what it is. And it's, you know, it's just far enough away from my apartment that I'm not there all the time weighing 800 pounds. but it's also close enough where I can easily get there and come on back.
Mm-hmm. Favorite album?
Oh, God. Favorite album. I don't know that it's necessarily my favorite album, but Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon is, from front to back, maybe the greatest single piece of rock music put to tape anywhere. It just, everything cohesively fits together from an engineering standpoint, from a production standpoint, obviously from a musical and songwriting standpoint. That album is just sequenced and everything melds together. It tells a story, and that's why I think anybody can, like, oh, I'm going to sync it up to Wizard of Oz and whatever, because it reads like a movie, and so you put it in. I bet you could put it into almost any movie, and it would come out like, dude, it's sunk up, man. It's crazy. it tells that story, and it's like, no, it's just that good of an album.
Yeah.
And again, I don't even know that's my favorite album, but that always pops up in my mind first off whenever anybody talks about all-time great albums, and it's sort of an obvious choice, I guess. If you're looking for less obvious, I could start going jazz nerd on you. Duke Ellington's Money Jungle is just an exercise in songwriting and arranging that is nobody's come close to since. And sorry. jazz is a different thing than rock and pop, so I can't, like, sorry, Beatles or anything like that, but... Dude, three of the best musicians to pick up those instruments, you know, Duke Ellington, Max Roach, and, Charles Mingus on bass. Good Lord.
Final question.
Great album.
Favorite beer?
Oh, favorite beer. I love Rev to death. I live stumbling blocks away from there, stumbling distance from Revolution, and love their beer to pieces. Again, I've never tasted a bad beer from them. They're excellent. But, and I think it's at least partially due to scarcity, is New Glarus. Because I respect the hell out of anybody who's willing to go, now we're gonna kind of exercise, we're gonna flex the muscles on the scarcity of it. You know, if you want it, it's special. It's special in and of itself, but we're not gonna wag it under your nose and have it at every corner tavern or at every Binnie's you're gonna find. It's you want it, you gotta come to Wisconsin to get it. And that's it. And it's already fabulous, but it's even more so because it's so kind of specialized, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Well, Chris, I'm glad to report that you got all the answers correct.
I don't know if I got the restaurant one correct, but thank you.
That worked. I'm happy you were able to come on the podcast today. And, you know, the quick hit questions aside, it was a fascinating insight into what you do here at the radio station. I'm happy to be able to have provided, happy to have been able to shine some light on it.
Yeah, man, thanks. And, you know, I think I'm going to have to turn, if we haven't already, turn those tables on you one of these days for your for what you do around here as the digital content producer.
Take a deep, dark turn.
That's right.
Regret that decision. Or it'll turn out great. Who knows? Stay tuned. Okay. Da, 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 da.
Only our gut will be able to tell. Maybe a little during the moment, certainly after the fact.
Exactly. I'll just be waiting for the collar tugs and wrap this up, wrap this up.
Oh, yeah. This may have been a mistake.
But if you want to follow Chris on Twitter, you can go ahead and do so. Once again, that's at Chris Swaik. Swaik is C-W-I-A-K. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Marty. Appreciate you, buddy.
Big thanks again to Chris Swaik for joining the podcast. The music world has been abuzz since our last episode, and it saw the coming and going of Lollapalooza. It was another action-packed weekend, and if you want to catch up on or relive the festival, head to 93xrt.com/Lollapalooza, where you can find all of our artist interviews, recaps, performance videos, and much more. Fleetwood Mac made their first public performance with their new lineup on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, performing Gypsy and the Chain. Lindsey Buckingham is out, while Neil Finn and Mike Campbell are in. From a music standpoint, the band sounded pretty tight, and it was evident that they have had a lot of practice together so far. The vocals, however, were another story. Finn took the lead on The Chain, and it gave the song a different dynamic than fans might be used to. Not packing the same punch as Buckingham, it appears the group may have to test these songs out on the road and get reception from fans if they want to reshape how they deliver the songs. Chris Novoselic brilliantly responded to fans critical of the mini Nirvana reunion that took place at a Foo Fighters show in Seattle the other day. Novoselic came out on stage alongside Dave Grohl and Pat Smear to perform the Vaseline song Molly's Lips. Apparently fans were critical of the fact people were calling it a Nirvana reunion without Kurt Cobain. Novoselic responded on Twitter by saying, "We tried to get a hold of him for this gig. As many times as we tried to contact Kurt, we just couldn't get through. The phone just kept ringing and ringing. Kurt does not have email. In fact, I've never emailed him in my life, and I've been online since 1993. Finally, U2 avoided a potentially crushing situation as they were forced to cut short a Berlin concert when Bono lost his voice. The band was performing Beautiful Day, and Bono was struggling to sing along. After the song concluded, he motioned to his band to wrap things up and told the crowd that they needed to take a 10 to 15 minute break to see what was going on. They never returned, ultimately canceling the concert. However, the good news is that nothing serious is going on with Bono's voice. He's told by his doctor that with a little rest and recovery, he can get back out on the road soon. Their concert in Berlin was rescheduled until this November. Thank you once again to everyone that tuned in to the episode today. As a reminder, you can find us on iTunes by searching the library for Inside the Archives. Subscribe to the show, leave us a rating and a review, and find a full archive of every episode that we've released thus far. You can find me on Twitter at Marty Rosenbaum, and follow the station at 93XRT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For 93XRT and Inside the Archives, I'm Marty Rosenbaum.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.